one of our best exports. This is a son of the soil that has made us so proud over the years. And he announced his retirement on the 28th of February. It was around midday. I follow him on Instagram. I can distinctly remember that video. Very short, smiling, happy looking. Stephen Pina announced to the world that he is no longer going to play football. He's hanging up his boots and is retiring. 20 years, nearly 20 years playing across 3 different continents. And he plied his trade in Amsterdam. He played for Everton, for Tottenham, for Sunderland. He played here at home for Ajax. He played for Vitz. I mean, an incredible career. He's with us now. Let me stop talking and let's hear from you. How are you doing, Stephen?
I'm good. And you?
Stephen Jerome Pina. Who calls you Jerome?
My mom.
Really?
When, like, in the family, because my brother's father,
yeah,
he's called Stephen, so, and all my family just called me Jerome. So when I went to school, my first year, I registered myself as Jerome, so, and there was another Jerome in class, so I had to change back to Stephen.
Determined to be one of a kind from the sounds of it. So it's, how's this retirement period been?
It's going fine so far. Quite busy traveling up and down between the UK and Johannesburg.
Yeah.
So doing some work for Everton in the communities.
Yes, you were announced as the first ever international ambassador.
So yeah, that keeps me busy, and yeah, it's also good to see smile on young kids' faces when you go into schools. They're all excited. It made me think of my days when I was a kid, when I used to see Tebogo Moloi in Westbury. So yeah,
yes.
it's good. You know, it's a good good way to motivate the kids.
Well, I know that community used to know it fairly well. My sister used to go to Westbury High. This is where you grew up.
Yeah,
that's in Westbury. Yeah. Uh-huh. So what was life like, especially for a young budding soccer star?
Yeah, growing up there was just you know, happy days. As a kid, you just play around with your friends every day in the street with a ball. So for me, that was basically my life in Westbury. I didn't get the stuff that was going on the side. So
wow.
It was only football.
You were able
football.
To escape all of the sort of the gangsterism in the area?
Yeah, but you know, most of the guys around on the corners, they're used to hanging, and for me it was just that's the kid with the ball, so let's just leave him out. he just wants to play football. So for me that was quite easy.
But it's also a community that's very strong on boxing. The boxing culture there. There's a gym that is also well known for you know, training and being a space where young boxers can do their thing.
Yeah, that's actually, I started as a 5-year-old. Went to the gym with my friends and I got knocked out, and thought boxing is not for me. Like you said, boxing is it's quite big in Westbury. So, and yeah, there's a lot of kids, and that's where you take all your frustration out, to go in the gym and just see the punching bag or punch one of the kids that you don't like. But now, I mean, the community, we know it's a lot of poverty, the drugs that's going on there. So the only way is through sports to keep. Get the kids off the street. So, and boxing was also one of the big ones.
Yeah, but as you said, for you it was the soccer ball. Everybody would see you at that soccer ball. So this dream, when did it first become a thing? Like, when did you start thinking, I'd like to be on that stage, on that field, in front of hundreds of thousands of fans?
You know, just playing on the streets. When, like I said, when Tebogo Moloi and them came to Westbury, and then I'll look at them and I'll say to myself, one day maybe I also want to play for Pirates, you know. And that was my dream, to play for Pirates as a kid.
Mm.
And when I got selected when I was 12 years old to join the School of Excellence, that's when I realized, I think now I have to be serious, focused, and, you know, you one step closer to your dream. And I just kept on pushing and just stay focused.
Tell me about that interaction with Kevin, Kevin Johnson, the coach at the time, who helped to kind of give you that focus around what you wanted to do. Because I think for a lot of kids, we do need that moment where you have a triggering conversation around giving you a better sense of what you can strive for.
Yeah, I was possible. when he picked me up the first day from my mom's house, he said to me, listen, you're going to a school, it's going to be tough. It's not a lot of kids that speak Afrikaans or English, so you just have to buckle up and be ready for the ride. And, you know, when we got to the school, my first month, I went back into his office. I said to him, coach, I want to go back home. I can't take it anymore. And he said to me, I told you, this is, it's not going to be easy. But if you stay focused, you know, it will pay off at the end of the day. And, you know, I went back to my room crying and stuff and just missing being around your friends. And I actually took into it and I started learning Zulu, Sotho, just to mingle with the guys. And, you know, it became my second home. And since that day on,
That's good. Be all sorts of multilingual, you know, because on the field, of course, we need to have you guys working together as a team. So what did that do, though, being at that school of excellence as a youngster? And now that you're able to look back, how did it help to shape the way you carried out your career?
First of all, it for me it was it helped me to get over my homesick, helped me to adapt to different situations, also how to communicate with other people and, and you know, and yeah, discipline also. It was that was a big part because they hammered us on discipline at a school. If your shirt is not tucked in properly, you'll get from the coach. So yeah, and you know, when you get it at a young age, all that stuff, the discipline, you it basically shape you for the future. And I took that with me when I left the School of Excellence, and I told myself, you know, I've learned so many things at a school. This is how I'm going to continue living my life, and you know, make the most of it and become a professional footballer.
Yes, because you are definitely one of the most accomplished and most recognizable football stars that have come out of South Africa. So I think there is a difference in terms of how you ran your career, and wondered about whether or not this School of Excellence it deposited in you this desire to strive and to obviously carry it out for the best, at optimally as possible, for the best, most amount of benefit as possible.
Yeah, it did. I mean, you know, if it wasn't for the School of Excellence, I don't think I'll be sitting here today.
Yeah.
I mean, they gave me everything. They helped me develop as a footballer, as a human being, how to communicate, like I said, communicate with people. You know, it shaped me. And if that wasn't there, you know, the foundation was laid at an early stage.
Yes.
And if that wasn't there, I think would have been someone else.
Because we watch how footballers can fall off the wagon. Is that why you have the Stephen Pienaar tournament? Because there are lots of kids that have a desire to become like you, but that might not have the channels through which to express and be mentored on their journey.
Yeah, that's the reason why I did it. I know in Westbury there's not a lot going on for the youth. So I started it off as just picking kids that sit on corners during school holidays, and we started playing the tournament. And I was actually involved in it. I played the first year. There was only four teams, and I realized, you know, the response from the people in the community was so positive, and it just started growing every year.
Yeah.
And today we're sitting with 120 teams.
What, 120 teams?
Yeah, from different age groups, still the over 35s as well. So, I mean, it's been, you know, and for me, I always preach to the kids. I say to them, listen, not everyone's going to be a football star, or anyone's going to be a hockey star or boxer or whatever. But as long as you discipline and you know what you want in life, you can become a doctor, you can become a lawyer. It's not only sports, but sport bring people together. And for me, that was the most important thing, to bring the whole community together, no matter what we're going through in our daily lives. And, you know, now people are looking up to it. Like when the tournament finished, they can't wait for next year. So it's, it's not only about the kids, it's the whole community. So that's, you know, I see old people smile. It makes me happy as well.
Yeah, it's the sort of initiatives we need in some of our communities, because it attracts teams from Rivoli, from Toekomstrest, there's Noordgezicht, there's Soweto, Westbury, Bosmond. You know, 120 teams, I think that is very, very impressive. And to see the community support, it makes it even better. So why is Everton so much more special to you than all the other teams that you've played at?
Now all the clubs, you know, where you spend time, they're part of your life. But for me, I think spending 8 years at a club, and I went back two times to the club. So, and this is the third time. So, I mean, from the first day I walked in the city, people came up to me. They didn't even know me when I signed. They came up to me. They were so, so warm to me. They said, welcome to our city. Hope you enjoy it. Wow. The club, it's a people's club. So that, you know, that connection I felt from day one. And when I went back, it was just a special, special place. When I, for the second time, the reception I got from the supporters and that, and the people in the club, it's like a tight family knit, and you know, they care about the club. So to represent a club for me, it's something special.
Yeah, because you are the first international ambassador. So what exactly does that entail in terms of what you'll be doing? Is it about promoting Everton to African fans, to South African football lovers?
Yeah, you know, Everton is a big club in the UK. It's one of the founders of the Premier League. So the fan base in Africa is not as big as compared to the Man United, Liverpool. So me being out here representing Everton, you know, let people know about the club, the history of the club. And they're also starting in Kenya. So it's, you know, with SportPesa being part of the club, the main sponsor, we're trying to get people around Africa to, you know, follow the Premier League, and also obviously try and get them to support Everton.
Yeah, that's an exciting job.
It is. I mean, I do spend a lot of time also. Everton is quite big in the communities, like we're working with underprivileged kids. So that when I got a call to join, I said, you know, that's part of what I want to do in my life after football. So, you know, it was a no-brainer if I said no to the club, and that's why I'm part of them, and they're supporting a lot of communities as well.
Right, and I was just looking at what the head of commercial at Everton Football Club had to say about you. He said Stephen was one of the club's most exciting players across the last decade. He had a great relationship with the Everton fans, but also entertained fans of the Premier League for many years. He's one of the most recognized African players with continental and international appeal, and was so excited to start working in collaboration with both Stephen and commercial partners. So it's going to be, it sounds like it's going to be a great, exciting journey ahead. But what else are you up to apart from this ambassadorship? Because, you know, retirement is, I imagine, is difficult, because you now have to fill this time that was occupied. We were speaking to Amanda Dlamini not too long ago. Well, your life has been occupied by this thing for so long. She also recently retired, and there's that void.
Yeah, there's, you know, you have that void in your life, like she said as well. You have so much time now on your hands. Sometimes you get boring. You don't know what to do. But for me personally, being busy with representing Everton, that keeps me quite busy. But okay, I'm also gonna start end of May with my coaching badges. I'm going back to the UK to start them. So that's part of what I wanna do. And you know, if you wanna coach young kids, you need to be qualified. So that's what I wanna do. Get my badges, and yeah, try and get back into the game as well, and coaching.
Through coaching. Yeah. Was that always the ambition? What were the possibilities you imagined beyond retirement?
I always thought I'll move somewhere where no one knows me. Just get myself a small house on the beach and
little
just every day.
Bachelor all day.
That's what I thought I'll do. But obviously, you know, football is part of my life, and through football, I'm here today. So with all the experience that I've gained over the years, I want to give back to the kids, not only in South Africa, but also in wherever I go. That's what I want to do. But to be fair, I just want to give back in a different way, you know, to say thanks to all the people that's been supporting me over the years.
That's such an interesting thing that you said, because we were talking about traffic and how frustrating traffic can be. I was saying to you, I was surprised that one of the reasons you cited for leaving Wits was because of the traffic and the amount of time you were, what time you had to wake up in relation to when training started, and sitting in traffic for 2 hours was just absolutely frustrating. So it kind of sucked part, it was one of the reasons that sucked the love out of it. So it's those kind of things of living in the city that make you think, gosh, I could do with a little quiet island life.
Maybe move somewhere else. No, yes. But I mean, it's part of life with traffic and you just have to accept it. But for me, it was, I wasn't used to waking up at 6:30. Normally, in the UK or in Holland or in Germany, training always started at 11. So you had enough time to sleep. And here I had to get up at 6:30 and, you know, stuck in traffic, make sure you get on time for 8:15. So it did take a lot out of me.
Because if you're late, you get fined.
Exactly. So, and I was always one of the first guys in the dressing room and could see in the mornings that I wasn't up for it.
And 6 months, by the time that 6 months came, you're like, enough.
Yeah, it wasn't only the traffic that played a big part. It was other things that was going on behind the scenes that I didn't take kind to.
Okay.
And, you know, as a player, you know, the time is coming where you have to make a decision when you're going to pull the plug. And for me, I just had like a lot going on between those 6 months, and I had to pull the plug. And even though I loved, I can still play, but it was just, you know, I have to think about my next step in my career, what I want to do. So, and I think it was a perfect time to pull the plug.
Yeah, at 36, I think 36 is a pretty good time, especially your 20-year career or so. That's fantastic. Now, there was a very special relationship between you and Leighton Baines. He described, or your combination, in fact, was described at the time as one of the best partnerships in Europe. And he described you as one of the best players he's ever played with.
Wow. Now, we used to make fun of each other, and they were always ask, why you guys got a good connection? And and they'll say the one talks a lot and the other one is always quiet. So that's why it's working.
Which one were you?
I was a quiet one, but on the field, I was always the one that moans a lot and shouting at him. And, you know, it was just bouncing off each other, you know, two different personalities. That's, you know, it forms a good relationship, and that's why it worked, I think.
Yeah, it suggests a very strong relationship, you know, that there was this camaraderie, a brotherhood that existed between the two of you. Can we talk about your mom?
Because yeah, we can.
In that video, like, what stood out, you said, I want to thank my mom and my family, and of course the rest of the fans, but she just stood out in the sense that she was first, and the mention certainly stood out.
For me, she was the pillar behind my whole career, you know, supporting me from day one. She was the one that bought my first soccer ball, so obviously I had to thank her without that. And no, she was the one that made sure I was on the right path all the time. Even I'm now 36, she's still on my case all the time. If I just do something wrong, small things, she's so strict, but she's very supportive. And, you know, for me, it was just, I had to talk about it and, you know, just say thanks to her.
Because she was a single mom raising you.
Exactly.
The sacrifices that had to be made. And now you're a dad yourself. You have your daughter here, and then you have your daughters in Amsterdam. Or is the whole family here now?
No, my one daughter is based in South Africa, and the other two in Amsterdam. So
you're between the two cities.
It's difficult. I mean, obviously for me, when my firstborn, the mom moved back to Johannesburg, and I was in the UK, and it was difficult. You know, FaceTiming and talking to a little baby, she don't understand anything. You know, it was hard for me, but now. Now that I'm back, I just want to spend more time with her. I know the other two, obviously, they miss me, but they understand the situation I'm in. But if it's up to me, I'll be with all three of them at once. But yeah, it's just the situation.
So you're between the two countries?
Yeah, right, I have to try and spend time with
And then the UK, with getting your coaching badges as well.
Yeah, that also, when I'm going back now, I'm not even going to see them. So I'm flying straight to the UK and straight back to South Africa. So it's hard, but I make sure I try and call them every day, FaceTime, make sure I speak to them, find out how the day was, and make sure everything is good on their side. So
yes,
makes me happy.
Yeah. And how good is your Dutch? Because what you learned, we talked about isiZulu and Sesotho earlier on. So is the Dutch any good? Is it better than the English and Afrikaans?
It's better than Afrikaans, sure, because on my way coming here, I got a call from a lady I think they do business stuff, but she was speaking Afrikaans, like. And I was so confused. I wanted to answer back in Dutch, but and then I thought it's difficult. But now my Dutch is good because I speak Dutch to my kids every day, but they reply back in English. So we try to get both languages going. So
yes. Gosh, the different directions in which your life has taken you. That's so fascinating.
Yeah, all through football.
All through football. So let's talk about money, Stephen. There was a time when there was an article that said that you were earning more than 700,000 rand a week. I don't know if it's true or not. I'm not asking for figures, but football, though, is a short career. It's also a very lucrative career. Would you say you're good with money?
I'm quite good with money. When I was at a school of excellence, I wanted to become an accountant. If I didn't make it to professional football, so
for me, accountants are bean counters and they're misers, hey.
So yeah, I'm quite good with it. So the only thing that I make sure is as long as my kids are taken good care of and my mom is taken good care of, I'm happy. It doesn't matter what I have, I can go and sleep with an empty stomach, no food, as long as they're fine, I'm happy. So, but yeah, obviously that figures, I think it was just rumors from from newspapers, you know.
It's far more than that.
No, but I've got a good team that's supporting me, my financial structures and stuff like that. So they make sure I don't misplace money anywhere, so they take good care of that.
No, I think when we talk footballing and retirement, these questions start to creep up, you know? So there was the match the other day between Sundowns and Barcelona. So, and at the moment, we're not going to the World Cup. Bafana Bafana is just not delivering the issues that are happening in our football. What do you think? What do you think of the local scene, especially when you think of the violence that we saw? You know, lack of discipline, whether it's from fans or players, it's just not a rosy picture.
No, it's not. I mean, for me, it was disappointing to see, like you said, the supporters running onto the field, breaking down stuff on live TV. It was disappointing. Mm-hmm. At the time, I was in the UK and the feeds were coming through Twitter and people were asking me what's going on back home, and you know, I don't have a word. I didn't have answers to tell them. As you know, I said that people are passionate about soccer back home, but things are not going the way they want it to go. So then they take the frustration out on other stuff.
Yes.
But for me, I mean, there's a lot going. I think when we don't win, people are not happy. So I think it's just simple as that. If the club starts winning games, the supporters will behave. But also, we need to make sure the security infrastructure is top notch. And if that's not the case, then we'll always have the ugly scenes that we have.
Exactly.
But looking back on the game in Barcelona, the supporters were well behaved. I mean, people want to enjoy the game. They want to go out and see people coming into South Africa. And the scenes was really unbelievable. Unfortunately, I didn't go. It was too cold for me.
Neither did I. No. You clearly like to snuggle. You need your warmth and your heat. No, you don't want to wake up too early and you're not stepping out when it's too cold. Oh, but Stephen, thank you so much. We look forward to everything that you'll be up to in the coming years and all of the best in your retirement. You've certainly done your part for this country and you've played your part and you've contributed immensely.
Oh, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me. And yeah, I'll see what I'll do in the next couple of years.
Yes, well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Stephen Pienaar, ladies and gentlemen.